the arrival.
I just put in the work every day.
No time to idle. Gotta treat every movement like the final. I won by a mile. Nobody believe it, they all in denial. Hey, back with a vengeance, back on the grinds, back to the business. Hey, God is my witness, they watching my moves like shows they binging.
Devontae headed for the end zone.
You know, it's important not to forget what Devontae Smith did last season and really throughout his entire career in college. We're going to talk about some numbers that may have raised some eyebrows as it relates to Smith, as we're just now 8 days away from the NFL draft, and these things kind of matter at this point. Also coming up later on NFL Live, the reason why someone here is a little concerned about adding OBJ back into the Browns offense. Plus, we are asking some burning questions of Mel Kiper Jr. today. He's here with us all show long. We're going to be putting the pressure on Mel. We got Ryan Clark. We got Dan Orlovsky. Guys, let's get to the news of the day. And we've entered this draft phrase that I was talking about, where all we do is talk about the leaks from the medical checks in Indy. You can see this here. The scale is rising up. Oh, now we reach 166 for Devontae Smith. So the Heisman winner apparently weighs in at 166. Now, no one thought by any means that he was big. No one thought he would be at 180 or something, but maybe 170, 175 felt like an expected range. So now you wonder, could this deter a team from selecting him early next week? Surely they're also considering his 345 yards, six touchdowns in the college football playoff alone. But over the last 10 drafts, there have been 38 wide receivers selected in the first round. Of those 38, only one weighed fewer than 170 pounds. That was Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma in 2019. He was selected 25th overall by the Ravens. The Heisman Trophy winner will look to join Brown with a first-round selection next Thursday. So, Ryan, you were a DB in the NFL. Have you ever covered a 166-pound receiver?
Absolutely not. I did chase some people's kids around our locker rooms on walkthrough Saturdays, though.
Man.
They felt like they were about the same size, and I couldn't catch them either. Listen, I've known Devontae for a long time. Obviously, being from Louisiana, this is a player that has been talked about around this city in Baton Rouge forever. And he's always been slim. I mean, it's kind of like watching Kevin Durant hoop, right? You know that this guy is smaller, but he understands how to use his body. If you see him get off of press coverage, if you see the way he uses space, the way he uses stems and straightens and head nods and routes, he understands how to get open. If you're a team, you're going to look at him and say, okay, how does his weight not necessarily affect him in the sense of being effective? How does it affect him as compared to the other players, to the Jalen Waddles, to the Jamar Chases? And that's how you're going to decide about whether or not you want to pick him and at what number. But Devontae Smith can play football. It's not his size that got him open. He is a route running specialist, and that will transfer to the NFL.
Yeah, it's important to point out, 15 years ago, this is a different conversation, okay? 15 years ago, because it's a different NFL. First of all, the rules are different, right? You can't really bang receivers more than 5 yards down the field. The second of all, you don't see receivers crossing the field and getting their heads taken off by DBs like RC. And the third, coaches are a lot smarter nowadays than they were, right? Understanding that, all right, Devontae Smith, I'll put him in the slot. I'll utilize some space. There's a little bit of a subtlety release-wise to create some matchups for him to make sure that you don't get a ton of hands at the line of scrimmage. Motion him down a little bit, again, to make sure that defensive backs fall off him. Devontae Smith's 166 pounds. He's going to get pressed at the NFL. Coaches, it's on you. Motion him down a little bit, put him in a slot, stack him, and he's really good at beating that man coverage. The fundamental difference between Jamar Chase and Devontae Smith is I don't have to do that with Jamar. I do with Devontae Smith, but he can still be a phenomenal player because of it.
Let's get Mel in here on this. Mel, how much does his weight come into play when evaluating him for you?
Well, I call him the splendid splinter, too. I remember Ted Williams. I was a big baseball fan growing up, played the game, and he was always questioning whether he could be a power hitter. Yeah, he was the splendid splinter because he was thin. He was skinny. He used to squeeze a rubber ball to make his wrist stronger. Had 521 career home runs, hit 406 in 1941. Russell Wilson was too short. Aaron Donald didn't have the size. Nobody's going to care what Devontae Smith weighs once he's in the NFL. You only care about all this stuff pre-draft. Once they're in the league, nobody harps on it anymore. Nobody discusses it anymore. Devontae Smith played at this weight throughout his career. He's played against the best in the business, and he has done a great job. So I wouldn't doubt anything about Devontae Smith. Like I said, they doubted Ted Williams. He doubted himself when he could hit home runs, and he did, hit 521 career home runs. So the splendid splinter, too, is Devontae Smith. You got a lot to live up to, Devontae, to be talked about in the same breath with the greatest hitter of all time, Ted Williams.
Yeah, I love the comparison and the nickname there. You know, one thing, guys, that I think factors in here is sometimes people think, all right, well, maybe in college he weighed a certain weight, and he's going to put on weight at the NFL level. It's important to remember that Alabama's facilities, their weight room, their nutrition, everything they had is NFL level, if not maybe
way better than the league.
Right, exactly.
It's better.
Okay,
it's
better. So Ryan agrees. It's better than some NFL teams, or maybe all, depending on where you're at. So he's kind of where he's going to be. So this is it, right? We're going to be 166 pounds. Maybe we're going to get to 170, but that may not change at the next level. Mel, what do you think about that? You know, when you actually, no, we're actually going to ask you some more. We're actually going to play a game here. So this is called Ask Mel. Over the course of the show, we're going to pepper Mel with our questions about the upcoming draft. Dan, you're going to get the first one against our better judgment. We're going to let you go first. What do you have for Mel, Dan?
I got two for you. I'll ask you the first one right away.
Sure.
Kyle Pitts, you've been doing this for a long time. Where does he rank all time for tight ends with you?
Number one, and I go back to Kellen Winslow Sr. When I first started in this business coming out of Missouri, had a tremendously high grade. Kellen Winslow Jr. did as well, Vernon Davis. But after all said and done, and the grades are finally in, they're written in pen now, they're etched in stone, Kyle Pitts is the highest rated tight end ever.
Okay, now let me do this to you. I'll change it up. Because this is
crazy.
He's going to play essentially in the NFL. If I took tight end away from his name and put wide receiver next to it, in this class, where would he rank in this wide receiver class if I said he's a wide receiver?
Michael, I'm a receiving entity, Dano. So you talk about him as the number two player on the big board ahead of the three big-time receivers in this draft, which are Devontae Smith and Ja'Marr Chase and Jalen Waddle. So something he's the best player in this draft. I have him number two behind Trevor Lawrence. So to answer your question, he's the highest-rated receiving entity in this draft and the highest-rated tight end ever.
That's unbelievable.
That
when you think about, I mean, just the statement there of all the players that Mel Kiper Jr. has evaluated over the years of his career, Kyle Pitts coming in at the top.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
I'm here for one reason. For my brother's honor. He was murdered.
This is not new.
We have leverage right now. We got to keep pushing forward.
I think it's disgusting.
There is no quick fix to this.
This is an American issue that everybody should take offense.
George Floyd's death created a palpable sense of horror, of anger, that reverberated through the sports world. Athletes raised their collective voices against the mistreatment of Black people to levels not seen in over 50 years.
This is what we, the players,
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League,
believe Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
That was the reaction from around the NFL last summer as players, coaches, and executives dealt with the social unrest after the killing of George Floyd. Yesterday, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was found guilty on all three counts for his role in the murder of George Floyd last May, including second-degree murder. The most serious charge carries a maximum sentence of 40 years. Floyd's death and the video, which showed Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes, became a catalyst for the sports world's racial and social justice movement last summer. The NFL released a statement saying the outcome in the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis does not undo the loss of life. Mr. George Floyd should be here with us today. Our hearts remain with the Floyd family, and we understand the pain, anger, and frustration does not go away even when justice is delivered. Importantly, even as we identify reasons for hope, we must continue to help move our society toward a more equal and just tomorrow. We are proud to partner with NFL players and clubs and remain committed to do the important work needed to make positive change in our society. Dolphins GM Chris Greer addressed the verdict earlier today.
Yesterday's verdict was a very emotional day for many.
You know, for me as an African American, there was a sense of relief and sadness. You know, George Floyd was senselessly taken from family and friends. His story was one of many that have taken place in our communities over the years. It's 2021, and yet people of color are still asking for equality and justice. The jury in Minnesota served notice that police brutality is unacceptable and people will be held accountable for their actions. We as a people should all be touched by the raw emotions of joy and relief by the verdict. The justice system worked for people of color yesterday. However, we cannot forget that a life was lost.
Extremely powerful from Chris Greer there. RC, how are you feeling now that the trial is over and we have a verdict?
There was a slight relief in understanding that justice was served. There was no celebration. There was no excitement. I understood that a man had lost his life, and it wasn't what was heard yesterday after give his life for the country to receive justice. He was murdered. And throughout history, America has made black people feel like our lives weren't valuable, whether you were sold as slaves, whether you were sprayed with water hoses, whether you were beaten in 1955 and your name was Emmett Till, whether you were beaten in Los Angeles in 1992 and your name was Rodney King, whether you were Trayvon Martin or Breonna Taylor or Philando Castile. Over and over again, not only have individuals shown us that our lives didn't matter, but the justice system as well. And so I was torn between watching every day of the trial so I can be informed, so I could educate, and watching every day of the trial and knowing that the prosecution is doing a great job and starting to get my hopes up. And even though I was hopeful, I never had the expectation, because hope breeds one thing, expectation breeds disappointment. And to be sitting on my couch yesterday crying as my wife sits on the other side, and to be texting actually Dan, who reached out and just talk about the relief and tell him that I was crying. It was one day of relief that says today a black life mattered, that today justice was served. But we know that today is just a start. We can't let this relief continue. We have to continue to do the work. As black people, we have to show grace, and we have to allow others who don't know as much, who haven't experienced as much, to learn. And I'm willing to do that. On the other side, you have to be willing to learn, you have to be willing to stand up, and you have to be willing to say.
RC, we might have lost there, but we'll get him back as soon as we can. Dan, wanted to give you an opportunity to comment.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good word by RC right there. I think like yesterday afternoon leading up to the announcement, I was just thinking of my boys. I was thinking about my friends, guys that I played college football with, guys that I played in the NFL with, thinking about my boys. RC was one of them, Dominique Foxworth, Swagoo, Acho, Emmanuel Acho, and just, you know, thinking about their emotions, thinking about their feelings, reaching out to them. You know, everybody but Acho's got a son, thinking about their emotions tied to their son and their families. And, you know, I texted those guys and kind of just said, oddly, I was relieved and happy for them. And I just kept kind of thinking about them and their families as the announcement came down, just thinking about the guys that I consider to be family members of mine.
Yeah, you know, the point of relief is important, but also, as RC so eloquently said, also keeping our eyes on the future and making sure that change can continue to happen. Raiders owner Mark Davis took full responsibility for this post. This got a ton of attention yesterday. The Raiders Twitter account tweeted out, it read, "I can breathe." The tweet did not sit well with some. He explained later, saying, Mark Davis, he said he was driving home from a meeting when the verdict came in. Soon after, I was listening to George Floyd's brother, Felona, speak, and he said, "Today we are able to breathe again. I took my lead from him. In my mind, that was all I needed to say. I can breathe. I felt that was a powerful statement. Today was a day where I can breathe, and we can all breathe again because justice was served. But we do have a lot of work to still do on social justice and police brutality." That's Mark Davis's statement. Today, George Floyd's brother, Felonis, issued a statement expressing gratitude toward Mark Davis and the Raiders organization for the support and ongoing pursuit of justice and equality for all.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
NFL Live is going to the draft.
Let's go!
Next Wednesday through Friday, Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears, Ryan Clark, Dan Orlovsky, and I will be together in Cleveland with two-hour specials on ESPN, in-depth tapes, next-level analysis, and all the latest news from the 2021 NFL Draft. Don't miss it. Let's go out with some bang. Can't wait for the draft. And hey, quick reminder of what the Eagles have been up to. They hired Nick Sirianni as their new coach, traded away Carson Wentz, seemingly paving the way for Jalen Hurts to take over and let them see what they have in their second round pick, but might not be that simple. Eagles GM Howie Roseman and head coach Nick Sirianni were asked about the quarterback position today. Listen to this.
We're going to evaluate every player and nothing is off the table.
Hey, Martin, Frank.
I'm sorry, in Hurts, though. We didn't get an answer on Hurts. Or Nick, maybe Nick can answer that.
Yeah, I mean, to name any starters at this particular time, we've been working with these guys for 2 days, right? We've been working with these guys for 2 days. My biggest thing is competition. Again, we've talked a little bit about my core values. It's my second core value. It's this team's second core value. Competition's a huge thing, and we're going to have competition at every position.
So, Ryan, I mean, they're having a competition at the position. You thought that was really funny. So let me just start there, RC. We're rock, paper, scissoring here. He didn't say.
I'm a big rock guy, by the way, so we're clear.
Oh, I'm usually scissors, so you can beat me. RC, what do you think?
You know, I think this is crazy. When you look at the whole offseason saga of the Philadelphia Eagles, many people thought that they were going after Nick Sirianni so they could keep Carson Wentz. Obviously, he gets traded away to Sirianni's former team. And then when you have Jalen Hurts in the building and you trade back, it's thought that Jalen Hurts is your guy. There isn't a world where it's an open competition between Jalen Hurts and Joe Flacco. Is it like that? That isn't a real thing. And so when I'm starting to look at this team, this looks like a team that's in disarray, like a team that refuses to have a direction. They had an opportunity to stand behind their quarterback and understand that it doesn't actually mean he has to start. It doesn't have to mean that he is the quarterback of the future, but it gives your team some direction. It lets you know that this is who we believe in. This is a guy that could be our franchise quarterback, and we also love the person. They won't do that. And so to me, the Philadelphia Eagles continue to send out smoke screens to say, you know what? We aren't ready for this moment. Now, if they want somebody to be in play for their pick, that's another thing. But nothing from the offseason, from their new head coach, or from their GM gives me any faith that the Eagles will right the ship in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, they also left the door open to RC's point that they might take a quarterback. That was really interesting if they were picking at 6. They're not doing that anymore. When you think about that, plus not naming Hurts the starter, what comes to mind?
They're not taking a quarterback, nor should they, okay? Trading back tells me nothing about what they think of Jalen Hurts. Trading Carson Wentz tells me everything of what they think about Jalen Hurts. You moved on from Carson Wentz because you think that Jalen Hurts can be your guy. Here's the thing, Philly. You drafted this kid in the second round with the intention that eventually he could potentially be your starting quarterback. You should be sitting there hoping like, oh my goodness, we might be one of those teams that luckily drafts a quarterback in the second or third round. He ends up being a really good player. He's our starting quarterback on the cheap, and we can use picks elsewhere. This is simple, Philadelphia. Like, this is the dream come true for general managers in the NFL. You have 3 first-round picks next year if Carson Wentz plays 75% of his snaps in Indy. You could potentially be sitting there going, we got Jalen Hurts. He was really good on a really bad football team, and now we can supplement our roster. You're not taking a quarterback. No one thinks you're taking a quarterback. It would be stupid to take a quarterback. None of these guys are going to fall to you. You're not going to trade up to go get them. Jalen Hurts is your starting quarterback. It's really easy in Philadelphia right now.
You know, Mel Kiper Jr. with us today as well. You see on your screen, Mel, they've gotten the first three rounds, the 12th pick, 37th, 70th, and 84th pick. What do you think they're doing with that first round pick?
Well, they moved on from Carson Wentz, and Indianapolis is saying thank you. And agreed. Now you have a situation where you had the sixth pick, and now you took yourself out of quarterback situation by moving to 12. They're not going to be a quarterback more than likely there at 12 anyway. So it does fit what they need being at 12. Linebacker Micah Parsons could be there. Cornerback J.C. Horn, South Carolina, could be there. Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle, both from Alabama, could be there. So if they get a wideout to help Jalen Hurts, both from Alabama, both former teammates of Jalen Hurts, would be a great move. You go from 6 to 12 and you still get a guy, we would have considered it 6. So it could work out really well. The draft sets up well with the positions they need help. Wide receiver and corner are the two strongest positions in this draft. So for the Eagles, no. Quarterback, I don't worry about cryptic messages this time of year. You get all that craziness in the week leading up to the draft.
Yeah, it's only going to continue, right, Mel? All right, we're going to continue something that we started here today. Well, we actually did it last week. But anyway, it's called Ask Mel. We're asking Mel some burning questions. And, Mel, it's now my turn to ask you questions. So talk to me about this. The most successful second-tier quarterback as we look forward. Is it Davis Mills? Is it Kellen Mond? Is it Kyle Trask? If you're projecting, don't even think about where they're going to go. But who's going to have the most success in the NFL?
Well, I'll give you two for the price of one. I'm going to give you two guys. Davis Mills in the second tier, you mentioned out of Stanford, like him as a second-round pick, not a first-round pick, with only 11 career starts, and can he stay healthy and durable? I also think when you look at Davis Mills, beyond that second tier, there's a kid who probably would have been in the second tier, maybe in the first tier had he played, and that was Jamie Newman at Wake Forest, then at Georgia where he didn't play. But if you go back to 2019 at Wake, when he was hooking up with Sage Surratt, underrated receiver in this draft who opted out, he was really throwing the ball well, and I think if the accuracy kept improving, he's mobile, he can use those legs to beat defenses. Don't sleep on Jamie Newman, Wake Forest / Georgia, as a really good day three pick.
Dan, absolutely. I really wish we saw Jamie Newman this year, you know?
No, totally. I absolutely love both of those. I think Davis Mills throws an incredibly catchable football. We're going to get into that a little bit next week at the draft. Jamie Newman has all the physical attributes that we are looking at for quarterbacks early in the draft. Big, athletic, strong, great arm, plenty of different touches on the football, really intelligent as well. So I think there's a lot to like about Jamie Newman. We just haven't seen him play in like 2 years.
All right, for the 42nd straight year, the NFL Draft is on ESPN. It's also on the NFL Network, and the Game Day crew will be on ABC again this year, covering it from the college perspective. It all comes your way next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, with all 3 days on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and the ESPN app.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We continue our crossover coverage of next week's NFL Draft. Today, we have Peter Schrager joining NFL Live. He's coming at us from NFL Network. Peter, we're so glad to have you. Yesterday was your birthday. You turned 25. And now today, you get to celebrate with us, right?
25. I don't know about that.
I love it. I love celebrating with you guys. Fans of the show and fans of Dan Orlovsky's wonderful wardrobe. Let's rock.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't be on television without you, Schrager, so you can mock my wardrobe as I mock that, what you call hair on the top of your head.
Speaking of mocks, Schrager just released his mock draft 2.0 yesterday. By the way, here's a look at his top 10 picks, which includes Mac Jones going to the 49ers at pick 3, the Cardinals trading up to the 7th spot for a wide receiver, Jalen Waddle. We like that. We were kind of talking about that here the other day. The Panthers, this is really interesting, adding another quarterback to their roster, selecting Justin Fields at 8 overall. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But listen, Peter, your mock, at least at the top, lines up with all the reporting, including Mac Jones to San Francisco. What are you hearing about the 49ers' plans for their draft at that number 3 spot?
Yeah, look, you guys have two of the best in Schefter and Mort right out of the gates telling you, hey, Mac Jones to San Francisco is a possibility. And that's everything I've been hearing also. Although he is not the sure thing. I believe it could be Mac Jones, but it could also still be Trey Lance. You know, they all went up to North Dakota earlier this week. They visited with him. Trey Lance's parents were there. I could tell you, individuals from the 49ers got to speak with Trey Lance's parents. They are falling in love with that kid as well.
Ooh.
This one is going to be interesting because the Mac Jones thing is this. 77% as far as a passer goes, the best of all time. 4,500 yards, led the nation in passing yards. Had pretty much a flawless college football season.
Mm.
You could tell me that you don't know what he could end up being, but if he is at the best of the best, the absolute ceiling for him would be the most pinpoint accuracy passer ever, and that's Drew Brees. I think that's his absolute best, right? But the basement is probably Kirk Cousins, and I think that's a pretty good starting point as well for what they have in San Francisco with two great offensive tackles and all those weapons and a quarterback who can groom him the first year with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it makes a lot of sense for Mac Jones. But if Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch want to take the big swing,
yeah,
Trey Lance could be the guy at number three.
I also think a part of that factors into this is that Kyle Shanahan has probably immeasurable confidence in himself as a play caller. He's like, wait, all I need is a guy. Right, it's deserved arrogance or kind of earned arrogance. All I need is a guy to throw to the person that I'm going to get open on a consistent basis. And so there's part of me that thinks Kyle knows he's one of the best in the NFL, and he just needs a guy to kind of operate it rather than I need a person to go above the X's and O's.
Let's dial Schrager's mock back up here one more time because I mentioned it before when we looked at it. Really interesting to me is that at eighth spot, he's got the Panthers taking quarterback Justin Fields. Dan, this stuck out to you too. They've obviously, they traded for Sam Darnold, so they got a QB there, but Schrager's going in with the Fields pick there at eight. What do you think,
Dan? He doesn't know my past with Sam Darnold and the love for having. Okay,
two-part
question, Schrager. One, have you heard anything about when Sam went to Carolina? Was there any form of assurance from the organization to his camp that they weren't going to at least go move up for a quarterback? And then the second part would be, is Carolina for you quarterback, no matter who it is, or is there a very specific quarterback, this time being Justin Fields, that would be the only option for them?
Great questions, Dan. And I'll start off with this. I think if Penei Sewell's on the board at eight, that's the pick for Carolina.
Okay.
I think that is the pick if he's there. I don't see him being there. Here's what I say with the Darnold thing. First of all, everyone said, oh, he's going to get an extension. He hasn't gotten an extension. They're going to pick up his fifth-year option based on what I'm hearing. They haven't done that yet either. So let's wait for the draft. What the Darnold trade did was gave them optionality. And what is optionality? It means they could still make a choice. If they did all the work on these quarterbacks, and this is what they had to give up. That's not a lot, guys.
Yeah.
Sixth, second, and a fourth to get Sam Darnold, and he's not making any money. So this is still low investment as far as cost goes. My last point is this. Matthew Stafford, they went aggressively after offering first-round picks, the eighth overall pick. They went huge after Stafford. Didn't get him. They wanted Deshaun Watson to at least have that conversation with the Texans. Didn't get him. And obviously that stuff is a totally different story right now. So if Matt Stafford was their third choice as far as veteran quarterbacks go, they're not paying him a ton, and they gave up next to nothing to get him, and they actually like Justin Fields a lot in the pre-draft process.
Okay.
I don't think anything that Darnold is doing can absolutely hold them back. So, I know Matt Rhule, and I know Scott Fitterer. These guys are not shy. If they love Justin Fields and he's there, I could see them taking him.
They're aggressive, right?
But you think it's a Justin Fields thing rather than any quarterback thing?
I think it's a Justin Fields thing, but I think it gets really interesting if Lance or Mac Jones is on the board also. I just don't think because they got Darnold, it's a slam dunk that Carolina wouldn't go and do. Look, they spent the entire season doing the work on the quarterbacks. Darnold kind of fell in their laps. They traded him for next to nothing, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they still have the 34th pick. They still, to me, I don't think just because you have Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold is fine, and he's 23 years old. It's still a very viable young quarterback. But just because you have Sam Darnold does not mean you can't still draft
That's
a quarterback of your own.
Yeah, and, you know, Peter, to your point, maybe Sam Darnold, we're kind of looking at this the wrong way, thinking he's going to be the starter and they're going to build around him. Maybe he's an insurance policy as we bring Mel back in here. Mel, you're hearing what Peter's got to say about this. The Panthers taking Fields at eight, or maybe even a Lance or a Mac Jones falling all the way there, although I think that could be unlikely to Peter's point. What do you think, Mel?
I'll say this, the great Peter Schrager made some phenomenal points,
and
it makes you think about win-wins. I like win-wins. I had Troy Aikman, I have Steve Walsh. Played it out. Troy Aikman won it. We traded to Steve Walsh to New Orleans. Win-wins I love in life, and I think this could be that if you bring in a quarterback, but Sam's not necessarily the man. It is give Sam a fighting chance. The Jets did. Now you have Joe Brady. So I think what you're looking at here is Devontae Smith to help out. Remember, those two receivers, DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, free to go after this coming season. So you might have one left, and that would be a reason to bring in that third guy right now. And Devontae would be elevated to two or one. Or, as Peter said, Penei Sewell's there. He's your automatic left tackle. They think maybe Little or Irving, but if Sewell's there, you take him. I just think, do you help Sam Darnold, something the Jets didn't do enough of? Now you have Joe Brady. Or do you get a guy to compete and maybe say, okay, we're going to have two guys, and we hope with the one winner puts us above where we need to be. So this is a fascinating part of this draft at pick number eight, as pick number five is with the Bengals. I think it's the most intriguing draft I've seen in my 43 years of doing this.
Woo, Mel. Peter, last word.
Yeah, last words are, like Mel said, I think Sewell is a no-brainer, and I think Adam Schefter reported it yesterday. Carolina also is in the position. They don't have a ton of picks in this draft. If they don't love any of the things, they can trade back, and then someone else can trade up and get Fields or Lance if they fall at eight.
You know, the one thing I would say to you guys, it is also feels like if you're the Patriots or if you're one of these quarterback needy teams, you might need to get above seven to get one of these guys.
Good point.
Like, you can't think that they're going to fall all the way to 15.
There's a lot of pressure points, it feels like. After this 10-minute segment or 8-minute segment, there feels like there's a lot of pressure points.
We're so excited.
Okay.
We're going to continue our Ask Mel thing that we're doing here today. So, Peter, it's your turn. You get to ask Mel Kiper Jr. a question. What do you got?
All right. I grew up idolizing Mel Kiper, wanting to do what Mel Kiper does. I also have a son who is 4.5 years old named Mel. One of the only 4.5-year-olds in the world named Mel. Not named after you, Mel Kiper, but I don't know. Maybe there was some Freudian influence there with my respect for your work. So I will ask you, Mel Kiper, who is the greatest Mel in the history of the world besides my son and you, my friend?
Peter, you're shocking me with that. I thought it might have been like Mel Allen. You think I remember Mel Owens, linebacker out of Michigan, who I scouted, ended up with the Los Angeles Rams, had a heck of a career. So I was a big Mel Owens fan. Mel Allen, there's a lot going on here. But, man, Peter, that's amazing. I thought it'd be Todd Schrager, maybe. You know, after Todd McShay, I didn't expect it to
Todd.
Be Mel. But, hey.
Love Todd. Love Todd. Mel Schrager, and I'll tell you what. Mel Kiper, it is an honor to be on with you. This is a cool career highlight for me.
I love it, you guys.
Thank you so much, Peter. Appreciate it,
Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson, come on. We can all agree it's been a Mel of a show. We want to thank NFL Network for lending us Peter Schrager for the last 20 minutes. You can see more of Peter on their coverage of the NFL Draft next Thursday through Saturday. Of course, you can catch Wire to Wire coverage of the draft right here on ESPN and ABC. Thanks so much, Peter Schrager, for being with us today. We appreciate you.
Later, Shrags.
This is awesome. Thanks, guys.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Mel Kiper Jr. with us for the entire show.
How much do they value Kyle Pitts? This is a guy who could be game-changing.
When I go to Qdoba and they ask me, do I want queso? Of course I want it. It's going to be amazing. But that's not the best decision for me. That's not the best decision for my hips.
He's a once-in-a-decade type of player, guys. That's what Kyle Pitts is.
When Mel talks before me and I agree with every point, that means it's going to be a good day because we don't have to have a fight.
I mean, Mel Kiper Jr. is just a national treasure. We're so glad that we have him here. It's time to continue Ask Mel. And now Ryan Clark gets his chance, his shining moment. What do you want to ask him, RC?
Well, listen, Mel, I wasn't one of those guys whose name was called at the draft, not the first day, the second day. At least at that time, they only had two days, so I didn't have to wait too long. Give me the defender that won't be drafted in the first round that can be an impact player right away in 2021.
It's a great question, Ryan. I think you look at the Pac-12 and the women's hoops with Stanford, Arizona. How about USC and UCLA on the men's side? How about Cameron Bynum, cornerback out of Cal? Could be a safety. 42 career starts at Cal. 6 interceptions, 29 pass breakups, his feel, his instincts, and the fact he just has a knack for breaking up passes. He's a guy third on the team in tackles in 2019. He'll throw his body around. He's not afraid to make a tackle. You're not playing with 10 guys when he's on the field. Like I say, Ryan, he can also kick inside the safety because he will tackle. He's got that great instincts, and he ran a 4.49 at 6'1¼, 200 pounds. I really like Cameron Bynum. Hey, why would he be maybe a day three pick with all that talent? Because he could get a little lost in the shuffle with all these cornerbacks in this draft, one of the strongest positions. I really like Cameron Bynum's ability and that dual ability to be corner or safety, special teams. Love Cameron Bynum from Cal.
Music to RC's ear, right, RC?
Love it. I love it. Hey, anytime you get a guy that can be versatile in the secondary, that's how you make a team. I go back to my first camp. I was in practice or I was in the meetings. They say, who could play dime? I was like, I can't, coach. Who could play nickel? I can't, coach. Move inside, play safety strong. You do whatever it takes to make the team. And when you listen to Mel talk about a guy in that way, that tells me he's on a day one roster and can make an impact.
Yeah, it's well said, Ryan. That's kind of similar to what Dan did, too. All right, let's talk Browns. They won their first playoff game since 1994, last postseason. Now in 2021, they get OBJ back from the ACL injury. This offense was already humming along in an undeniable rhythm without their star receiver, so it does make you wonder exactly how this will go. Head coach Kevin Stefanski said this about OBJ's progress.
He's progressing very well. He's trending in the right direction, really. You know, Odell and Grant Delpit and Greedy, I think they're all on track. I don't know the exact date that is for all those guys, but really like how they're progressing.
Like the all LSU team there with the Browns, but glad to hear the update on the defensive side too. But listen, Dan, I realize like Odell Beckham Jr. is
awesome.
A baller, right? So we're not saying that, but you do have some concerns about him returning to this offense. It hit its stride after his injury.
No, tell absolutely. I've said this before. Quarterbacks play their best when they go play call, play, players. They think of a player in a matchup. The tape says when he had Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield would go play call, player, where's Odell? What route does he have? What's the matchup? And then play.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets himself in trouble. I played with Calvin Johnson and Andre Johnson and Reggie Wayne, and I know what it's like to go like, I don't care what the play call is. Where are those guys? And it's a fine line between trusting those guys to win and just running the play. And what happened was Baker Mayfield started to trust the coach, Kevin Stefanski. Coach called the play. It's a good play. I know it is because he's my coach and he's proven himself. And then he started to trust himself, like his eyes. What should I do with the football here and not being so committed to or so married to? I got to get the football to this guy.
Yeah.
And I would want to sit down with Baker and go, talk to me. You know, have you now learned it's play call, play, and then players? And understand, dude, we got 700 passing snaps this season. We got 17 games. There's plenty of snaps for you to get the football to Odell Beckham Jr.
Dan knows this. When you get to practice with guys like Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson, Odell Beckham Jr., you see some of the more freakish plays we've ever seen athletes make, whether it's one-hand catches, catching the ball in traffic, getting in and out of cuts. And so sometimes just it's hard to forget that.
Yes.
It's hard to forget how much juice 13 has and understand he has a one-on-one matchup. I expect him to win and get locked in over there. Man. What Baker Mayfield learned over the last half of the season was a lot of my guys can win. And if we run the ball first, if I'm protected, we can not only be good as an offense, but we can be explosive. We can get to the divisional round of the playoffs. Now, if you add Odell Beckham Jr. to that and you allow him to be a piece, not the piece, not the guy that has to get every throw, but a dude who is part of the progression, and when he wins, because he will win a lot, you get him the ball, that's when this offense will really be humming because he is a difference maker.
Yeah, Mel, when you think about what they're going to do in the draft, they got the 26th pick in the first round. A lot of us, at least I keep thinking they'd probably go defense because there are some holes there that maybe they could solidify, or not necessarily holes. They could make their defense better in the draft. What do you think they're going to do with the draft?
Yeah, wide receiver would be the only option on offense, and they could put that off a little, Laura. I think you're right. Defensively, Christian Barmore, interior defensive lineman, will look really good. Another pass rusher. I know Clowney came in. Could be looking at Jalen Phillips, Kwity Paye, if one of those two slip through. And then a linebacker, a versatile linebacker like Zaven Collins from Tulsa. So I think there's going to be some good defensive players in the discussion when the Browns are up in the late first round.
Yeah, defense was last year the weakness of this football team, and I think they've attacked it to make it a potential strength. John Johnson, free agency. Delpit healthy. If Greedy Williams is healthy and then Troy Hill is kind of able to step in as the nickel, that's an 80% new secondary. So if you add a pass rusher opposite Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, an interior pass rusher, a versatile backer like Zaven Collins, like Mel's talking, we have now flipped a weakness into a strength in Cleveland. That's a big deal.
That's absolutely, to me, where this should go, what they need. And you heard Mel talk about Braun Barmore. That's a guy who fits right in. You lose Sheldon Richardson. You've obviously added Jadeveon Clowney. Myles Garrett is a freak show on the outside. You've built up that secondary. Now, if you get one more corner, one more piece back there opposite Denzel Ward with John Johnson, now Troy Hill, that versatile chess piece in the secondary, I believe that this defense is what makes this team championship level, because we know what Kevin Stefanski did in advancing the offense last year.
You look around that division with the Steelers with a lot of holes to fill. You never know what the Browns could end up doing.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.